Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for with SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just $10. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Well, hey there, friends. Thanks for dropping by. I'm kind of sick of talking about what holiday it is every time you show up, but this one's important to all our animal lovers out there. It's National Hairball Awareness Day. Ain't that right, Chester? Dear God, what the hell is that, pal? You eat a damn raccoon or something? It is a raccoon. Let's head in, friends. I can't even look at that thing. All right, that's better. Hey, you know what's better than gator puke? SimplyScaryPodcast.com. For as little as $5 a month, you can become a patron and enjoy our whole catalog dating back to 2012. All ad-free and available to download or stream. Just click the patrons link and join the club. Hey, you happen to have $5 left over? Then go to patreon.com/DrewBlood. Y'all come have fun with us. That's all I'll say. Okay, friends. Our author tonight needs no introduction. But since that's only a figure of speech, let's introduce him anyway. Our pal Wade Garrett is the author of the notorious A Glimpse into Hell series and a Tales from the Graveyard series, which he's been kind enough to feature on this show. These stories are spin-offs from his novel The Grave Digger, in which Ben Hamilton, caretaker of the Cedar Creek Cemetery, metes out punishment to the wicked, as only he can. So, without further delay, I give you, from author Wade H. By God Garrett, Wrath. Wolf in Sheep's Clothes. Martha moaned as her husband Harold made love to her. After 75 years of marriage, the couple still shared a deep and enduring passion for each other. Born in 1929, Martha had seen the world transform in ways unimaginable during her early years. As a child, she weathered the storm of the Great Depression, watching her parents grapple with economic hardships and widespread uncertainty. The resilience she developed during those challenging times would serve her well throughout her long and eventful life. Growing up during World War II, Martha experienced the collective sacrifices and shared efforts that characterized the war years. She witnessed the bravery of those who served and the impact of rationing on daily life. It was during these years that she met Harold Bennett, a young soldier returning from the front lines. Their love story unfolded against the backdrop of a world in recovery, and they embraced a post-war boom that brought economic prosperity, suburbanization, and technological advancements. The 1950s and 1960s brought a wave of change, and Martha found herself captivated by the civil rights movement and the evolving cultural landscape. She and Harold navigated the shifting dynamics of societal expectations, adapting to the changing roles and attitudes of the time. It was around this pivotal time that Martha and Harold welcomed their first and only child, Rose, into the world. The arrival of their daughter added a new dimension to their lives, anchoring them in the midst of societal shifts and global milestones. As Martha embraced the responsibilities of motherhood, she imparted the wisdom of her experiences to Rose, enriched with the strength and shared experience passed down from a mother to her daughter. As the world embraced space exploration, Martha marveled at the moon landing in 1969, a testament to human achievement. The 1970s and 1980s brought further social and cultural movements, and Martha found herself engaged in conversations about feminism, environmental awareness, and the broader quest for social justice. The Vietnam War left an indelible mark on the nation, and Martha witnessed the protests and activism that shaped the era. Technological advancements continued to unfold, from the early days of radio to the widespread adoption of television, and eventually the emergence of computers and the internet. Martha, always open to learn and adapted to these changes with a curiosity that belied her age. As she entered her later years, Martha saw the end of the Cold War and the dissolution of the Soviet Union. Reflecting on her journey, she marveled at the resilience of the human spirit and the capacity for positive change. The echoes of history were woven into the fabric of her being, and she shared her stories with younger generations, becoming a living link to a bygone era. And so Martha's life unfolded like a tapestry, rich with experiences, challenges, and moments of triumph. She had witnessed the world undergo profound transformations, leaving a lasting impression on her soul and shaping the legacy she would leave behind. Larry slid out of bed, and in the enveloping darkness, he murmured softly, "I'm headed off to work now, sweetie. See you this evening." Martha, a 95-year-old Alzheimer's patient at the Cedar Hill Nursing Home, grasped Larry's hand.
"Do you know how much I love you, Harold?"
"To the moon and back?" Larry Moore, a man with a dubious character, spent the last 12 years working as a caregiver during the night shift at Cedar Hill Nursing Home in San Augustine, Texas. At 32 years old, he boasted a stocky build, emphasized by a noticeable beer gut. Standing tall, his long brown hair was tidily pulled back into a ponytail, and a distinctive handlebar mustache lent character to his face, framing bright blue eyes that held a depth of experiences. Pockmarks on his face hinted at a sinister history, potentially harboring secrets veiled in darkness. Despite his imposing appearance, Larry exuded a deceptive grace, a predator enshrouded as a wolf in sheep's clothing.
"Yep, to the moon and back."
In the middle stage of Alzheimer's, Martha became increasingly susceptible to manipulation, her memories distorting reality. Larry, with his unsavory character, skillfully took advantage of Martha's fragile state, deceiving her into believing he was her long-lost husband, Harold. The heartbreaking truth, however, was that Harold had passed away 3 decades earlier, succumbing to a heart attack. Larry shamelessly exploited Martha's vulnerability, manipulating her compromised mental state and leading her astray with deceitful intentions. Over the last 6 months, he sexually violated her almost every night, hiding behind the guise of being her beloved husband. Martha's life was marked by more than just the loss of Harold. Another devastating tragedy struck when her daughter Rose perished in a car crash at the tender age of 16. The grief was compounded by the fact that Martha never remarried or had any more children, leaving her isolated in a world that had grown increasingly indifferent. Now residing in a nursing home, Martha found herself in a state of waiting, the passage of time seemingly measured by the monotony of her surroundings. The vibrant tapestry of family, friends, and years of acquired belongings had dwindled down to a solitary bed in the company of strangers, a harsh and unfortunate reality of growing old. In this diminished existence, Martha's world had been reduced to the bare essentials. The remnants of her past were mere echoes, and the prospect of the future held little promise. The once bustling life she had known had dwindled to the quiet solitude of a nursing home, where she waited with her fading memories and a sense of profound loss for the inevitable conclusion of her journey. Cocoon. Later that night, Larry knocked on a door,
then gently peeked inside where he discovered an elderly woman sitting in bed, captivated by the glow of the television.
"Hey, Mrs. Hart, do you need anything?"
Betty Hart, an 85-year-old with dementia, responded with a worried expression.
"I haven't taken my meds today."
Larry sauntered into the room, his presence casting a subtle shadow as he approached the woman.
"I gave them to you about 4 hours ago."
"You sure?"
"Yes, ma'am,"
he affirmed, glancing at the TV.
"What are you watching?"
"It's called Cocoon. Have you seen it before?"
"No. Is it any good?"
"It's one of my favorite movies. I've seen it like 20 times.
"What's it about?"
"It's about a group of elderly people living in a retirement community who discover alien pods in a swimming pool. When they come into contact with the water, they are rejuvenated and become young again."
Having watched the movie himself and recognizing Betty's vulnerability to manipulation, Larry's darker inclinations surfaced.
"Can you keep a secret?"
"Of course."
"I've never told anyone this, so it's imperative you keep it between us."
As an amateur magician, Larry discreetly slid a rubber sleeve with a tiny LED over his thumb, skillfully conjuring a green glow that seemingly formed from thin air. With a deft touch, he passed the illusion from one hand to the other, casting a mystifying aura in the room.
"The aliens in the movie Cocoon are real."
"Oh my! How are you doing that?"
"Because I'm an Antarian."
Her eyes opened wide with astonishment, reflecting the lingering magic that captivated her senses.
Are you serious?"
With a flick of his wrist and a whispered incantation, Larry made the mysterious glow vanish before her eyes. The ethereal illumination dissipated, leaving behind an air of wonder and intrigue.
"Yes. I'm from the planet Antaria, same as in the movie."
Betty watched in amazement as the glow disappeared, momentarily transported to a world where magic and reality intertwined.
"Do people really become young again if they swim in the water with those pods?"
"We Antarians do have the ability to make people from Earth young again, but it's not the same as in the movie. That life force doesn't come from our pods, but actually from our reproductive system. It's part of our DNA, and it's the reason why we live for hundreds of years."
"Can you make me young again?"
"Maybe we shouldn't be talking about this."
Betty, with a tinge of melancholy in her heart, had never married or experienced the joys of motherhood, a regret that had become a constant companion throughout her life. The weight of this unfulfilled longing lingered, shaping the contours of her existence. Now, as this extraordinary opportunity presented itself, the notion of having another chance to redo life held newfound significance for Betty. It stirred within her a deep yearning for the possibilities that might yet unfold, a desire to rewrite the script of her existence and explore the paths not taken.
"Why? I don't understand. I want to be young again."
"Only way to pass on this life force is through sexual contact, and that would be inappropriate."
She grasped his arm, a silent invitation that conveyed more than words ever could. With a gentle yet firm pull, she drew him into the warmth of her bed, where the boundaries between longing and intimacy blurred in the soft embrace of the night.
"It'll be okay. Please make love to me."
"But you can't tell anyone about this. I could get fired."
"Shh."
With a soft tug, she invited him closer, intertwining their limbs as he settled above her.
"You can take me however you want."
the life force is transmitted better through anal.
Then do it.
A few days later, Larry strolled down the hallway, a carefree whistle escaping his lips. As he strutted along, faint glows emanated from some of the bedrooms lining the corridor, where elderly women were engrossed in watching the movie Cocoon. The soft illumination cast by the TV screens created a surreal and tranquil ambience. The passage of time seemed momentarily suspended. Exploiting their vulnerability and preying on those with Alzheimer's and various forms of dementia, Larry callously manipulated the elderly women, convincing them that he possessed the ability to make them young again. Unbeknownst to them, Larry had been secretly adding small doses of Valium and Ritalin to their daily medication, creating a sense of euphoria and energy that contributed to their perception of undergoing a rejuvenating experience. Toward the end of the hallway, Doris, adorned in a nightgown, stood in the doorway, a silent invitation in her eyes. Without exchanging a single word, Larry followed her back into her room. A hushed atmosphere surrounded them as the door gently closed, the distinct click of the latch securing their private refuge. The next morning, as Larry prepared to leave at the end of his shift, the living room was filled with elderly residents. They gathered, watching the movie Cocoon on a large wall-mounted TV. The room buzzed with a shared sense of camaraderie and excitement as the movie provided a common thread, weaving moments of connection among the female residents. The film became a catalyst for shared secrecy, gossip, and whispering, leaving the men in a state of bewilderment. Larry observed the scene, an ominous and devious smile stretching across his face. "I'll see you ladies tonight." Several of the women responded with shy grins and subtle waves, their voices joining in unison.
"We'll be waiting."
Over the next several months, Larry continued his manipulative behavior, having sex multiple times a night with delusional and vulnerable elderly women. During this time, Martha succumbed to an apparent heart attack, and her family, influenced by the acceptance of her advanced age, chose to perceive the incident as natural causes. Shortly after Martha's death, Doris tragically took her own life by consuming pills, an act that went unnoticed, highlighting the alarming statistic that 18% of suicides are committed by older adults. Following these events, Betty was found deceased in bed with suspicious bruising around her neck. This discovery prompted the medical examiner to conduct a thorough examination, revealing an unexpected revelation. Betty was pregnant. The medical examiner erred in diagnosing the reason for her death, erroneously concluding that Betty succumbed to natural causes and dismissing the bruising around her neck as a non-contributing factor. The misjudgment left a crucial aspect unexplored, casting a shadow over the true circumstances surrounding Betty's demise. Subsequently, the nursing home launched an investigation, suspecting one of the male residents to be responsible for her pregnancy. Ernie, a patient grappling with dementia, stepped forward and admitted to engaging in sexual relations with Betty. He claimed the relationship was consensual, asserting that they were romantically involved. When asked about the bruising around her neck, he stated she enjoyed being choked during sex, but he didn't kill her. Since no crime was committed, the nursing home implemented the following policy governing sexual contact between patients. The Cedar Hill Nursing Home recognizes the importance of fostering a safe and respectful environment for all residents. This policy outlines guidelines and expectations regarding consensual sexual relations among residents within our facility. All sexual activities must be consensual and based on mutual agreement between competent and willing individuals. Residents must have the capacity to give informed consent. If staff becomes aware of any concerns related to non-consensual sexual activities, harassment, or exploitation, they are obligated to report it to the appropriate authorities as per legal requirements.
Residents are encouraged to reach out to staff if they have questions or concerns related to consensual sexual relations. The Cedar Hill Nursing Home is committed to upholding the dignity, rights, and well-being of all residents. Ernie's family, upon learning of the situation, informed the nursing home that he had undergone a vasectomy years prior, providing conclusive evidence that he could not have fathered a child. This revelation highlighted that Ernie's confession regarding the relationship with Betty was indeed a manifestation of his dementia. In light of this, another investigation was initiated, this time focusing on the possibility that a staff member was involved. With rumors circulating that the police were planning on exhuming the graves of Martha, Betty, and Doris, Larry became increasingly anxious about the potential exposure of his nefarious activities. Contemplating his options, Larry discovered all three women had been laid to rest in a local cemetery. In a macabre decision fueled by desperation, he decided to sneak into the cemetery and pilfer their bodies, a sinister plan to conceal the damning evidence of his malevolent deeds.
Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for with SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just $10. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Angel of Death. The following morning, Larry called in sick and drove to the local cemetery. Upon arrival, he discovered the ornamental gate standing wide open. Sitting in his parked car at the entrance, he marveled, his gaze expanding as he absorbed the vastness of the cemetery, with its majestic oak trees and winding gravel roads weaving through the sprawling 500-acre property. The landscape was adorned with gravestones, crypts, statues, and monuments of diverse ages, sizes, and styles, emerging from the earth and punctuating the scenery as far as the eye could discern. An old wrought iron fence encircled the cemetery's perimeter, with large crosses evenly spaced atop it every 10 feet or so. Dominating the front of the cemetery was a colossal entryway crafted from stone walls. Perched atop the stone walls was a large decorative arch adorned with a row of crosses at its pinnacle. Beneath the arch hung a sign proclaiming the name, Cedar Creek Cemetery. Uncertain of the burial locations of the three women, Larry navigated the winding roads, scanning the cemetery for fresh mounds of dirt, perhaps adorned with flowers. Even if he discovered their resting places, uncertainty lingered about the logistics of exhuming the bodies. Furthermore, the dilemma of how to dispose of them added another layer of complexity to his sinister plan. For now, his primary goal was locating their graves. As he contemplated his next move, the distant hum of a lawnmower caught his attention, drawing his gaze toward a man riding a lawnmower. Seeing an opportunity to gather information, he decided to approach him, steering his car towards the slow-moving machine. Parking in the road, Larry rolled down his window, the scent of freshly cut grass wafting through the air. The old man on the mower, weathered by years spent tending to the sacred grounds, looked up with a gaze that held both wisdom and weariness.
"Excuse me, sir,"
Larry yelled out his window, waving him over.
"I'm trying to find some graves."
The man, adorned in dirt-stained blue jeans, a weathered blue flannel shirt, and distressed work boots, diverted his attention toward Larry and began maneuvering his lawnmower toward his direction. Atop his head perched a battered cowboy hat, its brim bearing the scars of countless encounters with the sun's relentless rays. Strands of gray hair cascaded down his shoulders, a testament to a life seasoned with wisdom and experience. His face, etched with creases and lines, bore witness to the passage of time, and his tan, weather-beaten skin told the tale of years toiling in the unforgiving elements. With a calm and rugged presence, the old man pulled up alongside the car and shut off the mower's engine.
Who you looking for, son?
I'm a YouTuber and I do videos about graveyards and fascinating people that have passed away. I have a list of names that I'd like to do a story on.
You came to the right person. I'm Ben Hamilton, the caretaker of these sacred grounds. I know every soul that's been laid to rest here.
That's good to know. I'm looking for Martha Bennett, Betty Hart, and Doris Reed.
The old man, scratching his head for a moment, regarded Larry with a knowing nod.
Ah, yes. It's a shame how they each experienced such heartache in life. I'm glad they'll have another chance at it. Maybe this time they'll find peace.
With a gesture of his experienced hand, he indicated a path leading into the heart of the cemetery.
There's an old mausoleum that direction. You can't miss it. You'll find what you're looking for there.
A puzzled expression crossed Larry's face.
What did you mean by they'll have another chance at it?
There is a realm hidden from mortal sight where mysteries evade the grasp of mere vision and understanding. A domain where the virtuous find their retribution and the wicked suffer for their transgressions.
With those enigmatic words hanging in the air, Ben started the lawnmower and drove away, leaving Larry alone in his car, lost in contemplation. The distant hum of the lawnmower gradually faded, replaced by a quiet stillness that settled over the graves. Larry was gripped by a torrent of unsettling emotions, Ben's cryptic message hovering in his mind like a haunting melody. In that moment, he found himself at a crossroads, confronted by the shadows of his past actions. He pondered the old man's words, "The wicked will suffer for their transgressions." Was he referring to me? He wondered. He glanced into the rearview mirror, his eyes narrowing as he grumbled to himself,
"A hidden realm. That's fucking ridiculous. That dude is just a senile bastard. Get your shit together, Larry."
With the realization that the women were interred in a mausoleum rather than buried and grouped within the same structure, a wave of relief washed over Larry. The prospect of taking their bodies now seemed more feasible. After locating their vaults, he envisioned returning at night with a rental truck, executing his plan to abscond with them under the cover of darkness. Navigating the road with caution, the gravel beneath his tires emitted a menacing crunch, the disconcerting sound echoing through the quiet cemetery where the gravestones stood as solemn witnesses to the passage of time. Drawing near the mausoleum, he observed the old structure looming like a sinister guardian amidst the graves. The stone facade bore the scars of time, etched with weathered engravings and subtle signs of decay. Initially, Larry presumed the women would be interred in a more contemporary mausoleum, creating a cloud of confusion. Despite his trepidation, he parked his car and forged ahead, summoning the strength to walk to the entryway. Upon pushing open the heavy steel door, Larry entered a dimly lit interior veiled in shadows, illuminated solely by a solitary, flickering, oil-burning lantern mounted to the wall. The air within was cool and carried a faint scent of death. Crypts adorned the wall, and at the chamber's center stood several concrete vaults. Larry hesitated, gripped by uncertainty about what awaited him in the dimly lit tomb. With a deep breath, he cautiously approached the crypts in the wall, his eyes scanning the names of the deceased etched into bronze plaques. To his dismay, not only did he not recognize any of the names, but all the dates were from the 1800s. A shiver ran down his spine as he pondered the eerie atmosphere, contemplating if he had inadvertently wandered into the wrong mausoleum. The cold air seemed to carry the weight of forgotten whispers, and the subtle creaks of the ancient structure added to the unsettling ambience. He started to leave, but the faint sound of music caught his attention. Upon investigating the source, he discovered that one of the concrete vaults had been slid aside, revealing a hidden staircase beneath it, leading to a lower level. As he scrutinized the ancient steps carved out of the natural limestone, wall-mounted oil-burning lanterns illuminated the path, each one getting more faint as they descended deep into the earth. "This is odd," he thought. "Maybe there's a basement with more crypts." Believing the women might be in the lower level, he cautiously descended the steps. However, after a few strides, an unsettling feeling crept over him, causing him to freeze in his tracks. Drawing nearer to the source of the music, he now recognized the haunting melody, "Angel of Death" by Hank Williams, an old country song he hadn't heard since his childhood spent at his grandparents' house. The eerie notes stirred memories from a bygone era, adding a surreal layer to the already ominous atmosphere surrounding him. Just as he contemplated turning around, an unseen force struck him in the back, propelling him forward and sending him tumbling down the stairs. In a frenzy, Larry clawed his way to his feet, frantically scrambling back up the stairs. His terror deepened as the concrete vault emitted a chilling grinding sound, sealing the entrance and imprisoning him within the depths of the mausoleum. Consumed with panic, he exerted all his strength in a futile attempt to dislodge the heavy concrete structure.
"What the fuck? Let me out of here! Anyone there? Please let me out!"
When no one responded, he desperately fumbled for his cell phone, intending to call 911. But a wave of dread gripped him when he realized there was no signal.
"Oh my God, this can't be happening."
Seated on the steps, contemplating his next move, Larry's blood ran cold as an old woman's voice echoed out, reverberating from the depths of the burial chamber. His eyes widened as he stared downwards into the dimly lit stairwell.
"Who's there?"
"Larry."
"This isn't funny. And whoever's down there, you're not scaring me."
Larry shouted, his voice echoing through the cavernous chamber. Driven by a mix of fear and frustration, Larry mustered his courage and descended the stairs, determined to confront whatever awaited him in the eerie depths of the mausoleum. The voice continued to call his name, each repetition sending chills down his spine. As he reached the bottom of the stairs, the voice seemed to surround him, coming from all directions. Numerous oil-burning lanterns cast flickering shadows in the vast underground chamber, exposing the unnerving presence of ancient crypts and vaults. The unsettling atmosphere intensified as the walls, floor, and ceiling bore witness to a greenish and brown patina, and spectral spiderwebs clung tenaciously to every surface, weaving a tapestry of decay and neglect. Rows of large crypts lined the chamber floor, and along the rear wall, recessed tombs held wooden coffins. To his left, Larry noticed several smaller rooms, each featuring steel bars and a door, reminiscent of prison cells. The dim light from the lanterns cast eerie shadows that danced across the crypts and reinforced the ominous atmosphere within the underground maze of death. Larry strained his eyes, searching for the source of the voice.
"Who are you? And what the fuck do you want?"
as the song Angel of Death by Hank Williams reverberated within the chamber. The voice echoed out again, directing Larry's eyes toward a passageway. Determined to locate the person, he proceeded down the corridor, uncertain of what awaited him in the shadows. The passageway led him to a series of three doors in a row, each displaying room numbers 14, 22, and 35. The very same room numbers associated with Martha, Betty, and Doris. As the chilling realization of the matching numbers took hold, Larry felt a shiver run down his spine, leaving him paralyzed in the dim passageway. The voice echoed once more, emanating from behind the door numbered 22.
Larry.
Confused and unnerved, he grappled with a surge of mixed emotions. The mysterious person appeared to have intimate knowledge of his transgressions just based on the room numbers, and they seemed to be intentionally toying with his mind. Questions swirled in his head. What were their intentions? Was this a trap to extract a confession, or did they have some sinister plan to exploit him? The uncertainty hung heavy in the air as Larry contemplated the ominous possibilities. Being someone who dismissed beliefs in the paranormal or anything beyond visible comprehension, his mind struggled to fathom the situation. The only explanation he could entertain was that a person, not a supernatural force, must be responsible. This realization sparked anger and frustration within him.
I don't know who you are, but you're fucking with the wrong person.
Larry.
All right, you motherfucker. I'm coming in.
Enraged, Larry seized the doorknob, dismissing its icy coldness. As he flung the door open, a wave of apprehension engulfed him. The interior mirrored Betty's room, but everything appeared extremely aged. Stained and peeling paint adorned the walls and ceiling. The wooden furniture exhibited signs of decay, and all the metal objects, including the bed frame, were rusted.
What's up, baby? It's Bretzky, and I'm here to tell you that SpinQuest.com is giving out free sweeps coins. All you gotta do is purchase a $10 coin pack, and guess what? They're gonna give you the coins from a $30 coin pack. That lets you play all your favorite games like Blackjack, Wanted, Dead or Wild, and we're talking real cash prizes, baby. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Spiderwebs clung to every corner, and a thick layer of dust blanketed every surface. Perched atop a dresser sat an antique record player, its horn unleashing the old country tune, Angel of Death. In the dimly lit room, a flickering table lamp outlined a shadowy figure lying in bed. Their voice, old and frail, echoed out.
Are you ready to fuck me again?
Filled with rage, Larry advanced toward the bed. Then a wave of horror and disbelief gripped him when he recognized it was Betty. Her eyes were hollow and glazed over, her skin a shade of gray, and a stitched cross Y incision ran across her chest and down her belly from the autopsy.
What the fuck? How is this possible? Yeah, you're supposed to be dead.
Betty slipped out of bed, her movements unnaturally rigid due to the rigor mortis. With an eerie and deliberate pace, she made her way to an old deteriorated crib tucked into the corner of the room. The crib, weathered and worn, bore the scars of time, with faded paint and creaking joints. Without hesitation, she effortlessly lifted the baby, cradling the child in her arms.
You want to see your daughter?
Paralyzed with horror, Larry couldn't believe his eyes as he looked at the deceased child, its tiny premature body about the size of his hand. The gray skin tone and fragility of the infant sent shivers down his spine.
Oh my God, why are you showing me that thing? And how are you alive?
The atmosphere in the room thickened with an otherworldly presence, and Larry sensed an ominous chill coursing through his very soul.
A frown stretched across Betty's face.
It's not a thing. She's your daughter, and her name is Abigail.
Abruptly, the infant's eyes snapped open, exposing glossy yellow orbs, as it chanted in a ghostly voice,
"Dada! Dada!"
Consumed by terror, Larry bolted out of the room, slamming the door behind him with a forceful thud.
What the fuck? I can't believe this shit is happening!
Then, to his horror, a voice resonated out of room 14.
Larry, are you coming to see me next?
About the same time he recognized it sounded like Martha, another voice echoed out from room 35.
Don't forget about me, Larry.
Then all three women, Betty, Martha, and Doris, began chastising him.
Get in here and see your daughter, you asshole.
Another voice barked out.
That magical dick juice didn't work, you lying prick.
A third voice echoed out.
You're going to pay for what you did to us.
Then, to his absolute horror, all three doorknobs began violently jiggling back and forth as angry voices declared,
Rapist! Murderer! Rapist! Murderer!
Paralyzed by terror, Larry desperately sprinted towards the exit, but an ominous low-hanging fog crept into the passageway. Within that spectral haze, grotesque and shadowy figures swirled within it, as if it harbored trapped souls. The air echoed with the anguished screams of 1,000 tormented beings, intensifying the bone-chilling scene. Panic-stricken, he dashed in the opposite direction, and as he hurried past the three rooms, the doors violently flung open, unleashing a dense cloud of ominous smoke. Betty, Martha, and Doris emerged, advancing slowly with stiff, creaking legs, their bodies locked in the grip of rigor mortis. Larry sprinted to the end of the passageway, reaching another door. Without a moment of hesitation, he burst into the room, only to discover the old caretaker seated in a rocking chair, engrossed in watching the movie Cocoon. The old-fashioned TV casting a subtle glow inside the room, adding a surreal touch to the unfolding nightmare.
What the hell is going on, man?
With the three women advancing, followed by the encroaching fog, he hastily slammed the door shut.
Is this some kind of trick?
He questioned, his voice fraught with fear and confusion. Ben cast a stern glance at Larry, his expression unwavering and foreboding, adding an unsettling layer to the already tense atmosphere.
No, it's more like retribution, pervert.
Retribution for what? And why did you call me a pervert? You don't even know me.
Sure I do. And now it's time to pay for your transgressions.
Who in the hell are you?
In the good book, I am acknowledged as a destroyer. Various cultures have bestowed upon me different names, including the Grim Reaper, Minister of Punishment, and the Angel of Death. However, I simply consider myself a humble vicegerent.
With Ben claiming to be something mythical, Larry now believed he was mentally deranged.
I don't know what the fuck is going on here, but you're fucking with the wrong person.
You think so, pervert?
I know.
Before Larry could finish his sentence, Ben traversed the room with unbelievable speed, gripping him by the neck. As he effortlessly lifted Larry off his feet with one hand, a transformation had overcome him, revealing a different and more ominous visage. Maintaining a human form, Ben's appearance could easily be mistaken for something malevolent, even demonic. However, Larry sensed an absence of inherent evil.
For Larry, true evil would be more welcoming. Whatever this creature was, it seemed to conflict with his own corrupt soul. A growing torment surged within Larry as he stared into Ben's dark eyes. Eyes consumed by an all-encompassing darkness. Ben's skin, resembling rawhide, appeared tough and weathered, a testament to its age, perhaps even ancient. Long fangs and jagged teeth adorned his menacing grin, while his lips appeared as black as coal. Ben glared into Larry's eyes with an intensity that sent shivers down his spine, his voice now a low and guttural tone.
Your days of terrorizing the innocent are over!
Feeling the grip around his neck tightening, Larry desperately clutched Ben's hand as he fought to catch a breath. His feet kicked wildly as he suffocated, and in a moment of despair, his vision faded into darkness. Rejuvenation. Larry's eyes snapped open, immediately drawn to the haunting glow of the moon in the nighttime sky. A surge of panic gripped him as he tried to sit up, only to realize he was nude and tightly bound to the ground, his arms and legs outstretched and tied to stakes. As he surveyed his surroundings, he observed several lanterns hanging from nearby tree branches, casting flickering shadows that danced eerily in the darkness. His gaze then traveled to three exhumed graves, and next to each mound of dirt sat a casket, two closed, one open. The closed caskets appeared old, rusted, and stained with earth, bearing the weight of ages past. In stark contrast, the open casket looked disturbingly new, as if it had recently welcomed a macabre addition to its unsettling contents. Ben, returning to his normal appearance, emerged from the darkness.
Hey, pervert. About time you awoke.
Gripped by a wave of terror and confusion, Larry convulsed against his restraints.
What the fuck, man? Why am I tied up?
Ben retrieved one of the lanterns hanging in a tree and illuminated a tombstone next to the open casket.
Do you recognize this grave?
You better untie me, dude, before you get in more trouble.
I'm not asking you again.
Larry glanced at the engraving etched into the tombstone, observing the name Martha Ann Bennett, born in 1929, died in 2023.
Yeah, it's Martha, from the nursing home.
He glanced at the open coffin.
I can't believe you dug her up. Are you some kind of sicko?
Ha, that's the pot calling the kettle black.
He moved the lantern over to the next tombstone.
And this is her husband, Harold. He died in 1994 from a heart attack. And the man you portrayed to be while you raped Martha.
I don't know what the fuck you are talking about. I didn't rape anyone.
Ben illuminated the third tombstone.
And this is their daughter, Rose. She died in a car crash in 1971. The poor girl was only 16 years old.
Why are you showing me this?
Suddenly, an ominous sensation seized Larry. As he shifted his gaze, he beheld Martha, Doris, and Betty standing beside him. Their skin wore a pallid gray hue, stripped of life and drained of vitality. Their bodies stood frozen, as if caressed by the hand of death, and their eyes, hollow and glazed, bore a disquieting yellowish tint, enveloping the atmosphere in an eerie and malevolent aura. Betty, with an unsettling calmness, tenderly cradled their premature child, adding a macabre touch to the haunting scene. Larry cast a troubled glance at Ben, his eyes betraying a mix of fear and uncertainty.
This can't be real. I know y'all are just trying to scare me.
In these hallowed grounds lies a realm usually unseen by mortal eyes. A place where the virtuous find retribution, and the wicked endure suffering.
What the fuck are you talking about, you crazy bastard?
Ben slowly moved his hand across the two closed caskets.
Rise.
Suddenly the coffins began shaking, and light along with a cloud of smoke ominously escaped from around the lids. To Larry's horror, the tops flung open, revealing rotten and skeletonized hands emerging from the coffins. With gruesome determination, the hands grasped and clawed at the edges, slowly lifting their decades-old corpses out of their resting place. Larry's anger morphed into sheer horror as the two beings emerged from their caskets. After nearly 30 years of being buried, Harold's suit clung to him in tattered decay, stained with the remnants of the grave. His face, once recognizable, now appeared sunken and obscured by decaying flesh. His eyeballs, desiccated and shrunken, stared out with a withered emptiness. After enduring 53 years in the grave, Rose had been reduced to a nightmarish state, a skeletal figure held together by decayed muscles and rotten flesh. Her once vibrant dress, now reduced to tattered shreds, clung desolately to the skeletal remains that were once animated by life. The darkness of decomposition had claimed her, transforming her into a haunting and grotesque semblance of the person she once was. After Harold and Rose took their places next to Martha and Betty, Doris approached Larry, her joints emitting eerie creaks as she dropped to her knees beside him, seizing his flaccid penis with her ice-cold and rigor mortis hands. Larry cast a terrified gaze at Ben.
What the hell is she doing? Get her the fuck away from me!
You claim you could give them their youth back through sexual contact. So I'm holding you to your word.
What the hell, man? I didn't say that shit! And you know that would be impossible!
Within these hallowed grounds, there are no boundaries,
Ben declared, his words carrying an ominous weight that reverberated throughout the cemetery. To Larry's surprise, Doris began sucking on his penis.
Get the fuck away from me, you!
He lost track of his thoughts as his dick began to stiffen.
I can't believe this is happening!
As Larry was caught up in the moment, overlooking the fact that a corpse was performing fellatio on him, he groaned with pleasure.
Oh shit, that feels really good.
Suddenly a pain shot through his groin as she increased the suction.
Go easy!
To his horror, she began sucking him with such intensity, it felt as if his dick could be ripped off.
Stop, you fucking bitch! You're gonna tear my skin!
A moment later, the flesh around his shaft tore loose, shredding inside her mouth. His superficial veins then ripped apart and began flopping around like limp noodles. Arching his back, Larry wailed at the top of his lungs. When he didn't think he could endure any more pain, a debilitating burning sensation began emanating from inside his abdominal cavity as Betty sucked his testicles out of his ball sack and into his lower abdomen. Only within the supernatural realm, between hell and the unknown, could such an unthinkable and sadistic scenario unfold. The mysterious and eerie nature of this otherworldly domain allowed for the manifestation of horrors that defied mortal understanding. To Larry's absolute horror, she commenced the agonizing process of slowly extracting his testicles through his urethra at the bottom of his dick, a ghastly sight reminiscent of eggs inside a snake. The nightmarish scene unfolded, pushing the boundaries of the macabre and defying the very essence of anatomy and reason. As each testicle emerged from the end of his penis, the pain mirrored the agony of childbirth. After she withdrew the last testicle, she began extracting his spermatic cords, followed by ravaged veins and a large section of his prostate. In an unforeseen turn of events, she began draining the blood from his body. With each gulp, he began aging, mirroring her simultaneous transformation back to youth. The mysterious and unnatural exchange unfolded, warping logic and ushering in a nightmarish metamorphosis for both Larry and Doris. As his life force depleted, Betty, Martha, Harold, and Rose laid their hands upon Doris, transferring the remaining essence of his life into them. As the eerie and otherworldly ritual continued, their bodies absorbed his dwindling energy, undergoing a rejuvenation that left them youthful, while Larry's body aged rapidly. When the transformation was completed, Doris, now in her 20s, rose from the ground with a burst of life. Martha and Harold found themselves in their 30s, their daughter Rose restored to health and full of vitality. Betty's age was reset to 20, and her daughter Abigail emerged as a strong and lively 9-month-old baby girl. The supernatural metamorphosis had unraveled the threads of time, conjuring a surreal and disconcerting display of youth and vitality, all while leaving Larry a withered old man. A few weeks later, Johnny Brown, a caregiver at Cedar Hill Nursing Home, sauntered into a room.
"How you holding up tonight, Mr. Moore?"
Larry Jacob Moore, a 97-year-old man, attempted to speak, but the clutches of Parkinson's disease had rendered him immobile. The room resounded with the harrowing echoes of a man, his lucid and rational mind ensnared within the suffocating confines of his own deteriorating body. Johnny approached a dresser and delicately placed a record on an antique player. The haunting melody of Angel of Death by Hank Williams permeated the room, casting a melancholic ambience. As the eerie notes wove through the air, Johnny turned toward Larry, a wicked grin stretching across his face.
"I got a ball sack full of that magical cocoon juice. You ready for another dose?"
"That you're ready to meet the angel of death, angel of death, angel of death, angel of death. When the lights all grow dim and the dark shadows..."
And that was Wrath by Wade H. Garrett. A good reminder to be kind to the elderly, or at least honest with them. A little about the author. Wade H. Garrett is an American novelist specializing in the extreme horror and supernatural genres, and he primarily writes about vigilante justice and tales of retribution. This story, Wrath, is a part of his Tales from the Graveyard series, a spin-off story from the novel The Grave Digger. Wade's books are extreme, and if you're still clutching your nuts after this one, well, use your best judgment. For tales of raw, unfiltered vigilante justice where society's predators and scum meet their brutal fates, check out Wade's 7-book series, A Glimpse into Hell. Available on Kindle, paperback, and Audible. Hey, who's got 2 thumbs and narrated 4 of them? Take a wild guess.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I'm afraid this is where we part ways, at least till next week. So grab a drink for the road, friend. We did the story, you're aware of hairballs. My job is done. So may the wind be at your back, and may the road rise up to meet you. Hey, if a corpse tries to blow you out there, don't worry. That's just Martha from down the street. The years have not been kind. Other than that, go fuck yourself. Good night, y'all.
Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for. With SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just $10. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.